You may know the story of the ancient prophet Tiresias. He was born a man, but for the bizarre crime of seeing two snakes mating, was turned into a woman. Then, a few years later, seeing the snakes mating again, he was turned back into a man. As Lady Bracknell might have said, to have had your gender reassigned once is unfortunate, but twice looks careless. However, things then got worse for Tiresias, because he became embroiled in a debate between Zeus and his wife Hera as to whether men or women get more pleasure out of sex. He had had it both ways, so they asked, which is better? This story has a certain resonance for me, not because of any sex change, but because I have been both a believer in God and an atheist. I was a priest in the Church of England, and that's when I was a believer. But to cut a long story short, I became disillusioned, and after a few years I left, and I left an atheist. To be honest, I didn't feel like I'd lost my faith. I thought I'd thrown off the shackles of superstitious belief and donned the freedom and reason of the Enlightenment age. But if you ask me now which was better, belief or unbelief, I'd have to say neither. I'd given up on full-blown Christianity, but having become an atheist, I increasingly found that dissatisfying too. It seemed to necessitate a kind of puritanism. In order to steer well clear of anything that smacks of religion, it seems to put certain areas of human experience off limits. So now I'm an agnostic. Now, many atheists and probably believers would say that to be an agnostic is to be rather weak. They would say that all we can do is shrug our shoulders and a bit like Catherine Tate mutter, whatever. In fact, I think that's wrong, and I've become quite evangelical about why agnosticism matters. The thing that is lost without it is the capacity to deal with something of that. Here's Kathy. Very good to see you. Cheers. The thing that's lost without agnosticism is the capacity to deal with something that lies at the heart of the human experience, and that is uncertainty. And that's what I take this evening to be about. The refusal of uncertainty and the corresponding lust for certainty. Think of one of the few more memorable things that the former American Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, muttered. It had to come this evening, and now is the moment, because there are indeed three sorts of knowledge. Things we know, I must get it right, things we know, we don't know, and things we don't know, we don't know. Everyone can feel happy about the known knowns, because they're certain. More alarming are the known unknowns, but because they're known, we can hedge against them. But most significant of all are the unknown unknowns. It's how we respond to these that really matters. And this is where I think that many who champion both a religious worldview and a scientific one fall down today. In religion, fundamentalism is the obvious case in point. Many studies have shown that fundamentalism is on the rise as a direct result to what people perceive as either social or moral threats. One way of dealing with these threats is to insert a certainty into the heart of your religion. However, I think that the lust for certainty can't just be blamed on the fundamentalists, for it also increasingly characterises mainstream religion too. The crisis over homosexuality in the Church of England will be a case in point here. For conservative evangelicals, what you think about homosexuality is a sort of proxy test of what you think about the Bible. If you're for one, you're against the other, and vice versa, and there's no middle ground. In the Catholic Church, it looks like there are parallel tests, perhaps over women priests or the use of contraception. The fear seems to be that if you chip away at these details of the faith, then the faith as a whole risks collapse. So again, the details are set as irrefutable certainties. When it comes to the scientific worldview, the lust for certainty is manifest in different ways. Just a couple of quick examples. Think of the way that some atheists go on at great length about the supposed irrationality of religion. Richard Dawkins' new book has 400 pages of it, and I believe people are buying it for Christmas. What he misses out, is that the non-rational dimension to religion is in fact its greatest strength, because it reflects this business of uncertainty. Think of the last time you went to a church funeral. It seems to me pretty obvious that this is one of the moments in life when religion, at its best, comes into its own. With architecture, music, and ritual, it has resources, not just for saying, I don't know what's going on, but for entering into that. And that's what people need at the time of someone's death. Losing a loved one, like any tragedy in life, is to lose control, is to move beyond certainties. In Dennis Potter's fabulous phrase, the genius of religion is that it is the wound as well as the bandage. That might be a very good definition of a mature spirituality, I think. The loss of certainty is found in other walks of modern life as well. Take the so-called politics of fear. This is the constant reference to risks, from hoodies on the street corner to global terrorism. Whatever the truth of these risks, and however they might best be confronted, the politics of fear plays on an assumption that people can't cope with the uncertainty around them. Politics then becomes a question of who can better deliver an illusion of control, hence the ever-increasing posturing machismo of Home Secretaries. What we're not getting any better at is understanding the risks, containing the fears, and living with the uncertainty. Now, of course, agnosticism can be weak. This is the great challenge to it, when it becomes a shrug of the shoulders or a de facto atheism. So if it matters so much, a big question is how to be an agnostic, in the sense of how it can be a weighty way of life. And this is what I try to write about in my book. And what I try to get across is that the agnostic way of life does indeed have great traditions to draw on. In fact, it's the best of the traditions of philosophy, religion, and science. For at their richest, all three are riven through and through with an agnostic spirit. They're lessons in living with uncertainty. Take philosophy, and no less a person than Socrates. He was a genius because he realized that the key to wisdom is not what you know, but how best you understand how little you know. That's why he irritated so many powerful people in ancient Athens and eventually lost his life. His philosophy burst the bubble of their misplaced confidence. Similarly, I very much like the thought of St. Augustine, that to be human is to be, quote, between beasts and angels. He means, I think, that we're not pig ignorant like the beasts, but we're also far from wise like the angels. So faith for Augustine was about deepening the capacity to enter this unknownness, this cloud of unknowing, and conversely not about fleeing from it in the shallow certainties that religion can deliver. Finally, and quickly, in science, it seems to me that the best sort of science is the sort that answers questions by opening up more questions, and even best when the questions can't fully be answered by science itself. And this is the sort of thing you find in cosmology. On one level, of course, cosmologists understand a tremendous amount about the universe, but simultaneously, this only deepens the universe's tremendousness. The science keeps pointing to the big, ultimately unanswerable questions, such as why we're here, or why there's something, not nothing. So, it seems to me that the revival of a committed, passionate agnosticism in philosophy, religion, and science is pretty vital for our age. Without it, religion will become more extreme, science will become more triumphalist, and our politics increasingly bound by fear. Thank you.